and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The collective West faces economic disaster, high debt, escalating inflation, diminished competitiveness, and a very serious energy crisis. Much of this, if not all of this, have been self-inflicted. But the worst crisis the West faces is the crisis of legitimacy and the failure of neoliberalism. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we cross to Martin Jay. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. What do you think of my introduction, George? Did I, you know, overdo it? Am I prone to hyperbole here? Did I stress all the right points?
Yeah, you did. I mean, it's a very succinct summary of where we are. I mean, when we think of legitimacy, what do we really mean? We mean political ruling elites that can actually deliver what their voters in a democracy or what their populace generally wants, which is peace, prosperity, and at a minimum, security, food on the table, and protection from the elements. Now, the leaders of the West have signally failed to provide any of those things. They've got themselves involved unnecessarily in a war in which the West has no discernible interests. And they have done so for kind of bizarre, obscure ideological reasons that they have failed to articulate when they talk about whether it's a new world order, the liberal world order, the rules-based order. None of it resonates with the voters because they rightly don't understand what any of these terms mean. And so as we head towards staggering economic crisis, we're talking about Britain will soon have an inflation rate of 11%, Germany, 8%, where a few years ago, the idea of even 1% inflation for the Germans meant, my God, Hitler's on his way back. And then the United States is clearly heading towards stagflation. So it really is a question of why have the ruling elites led their countries into this disaster, a disaster of their own choosing. It was not a natural disaster, it was of their own choosing.
Martin, but everything that George said is completely obvious to all of us. But when we're asked, you know, how are you going to address these issues? And we hear the response, oh, we're gonna back Ukraine as long as it takes. I mean, but that doesn't answer the question, okay? And it's really quite insulting because decision makers, the leadership in the West, they don't have to deal with the consequences of their own decision. I've always said, I doubt any of these leaders in Europe and in North America have a clue what a loaf of bread costs. Mark?
No, they don't know what a loaf of bread costs or a liter of gasoline or even a pint of beer costs. That's not really their concern. They're not attached to that economy. But it's very disturbing what you summarize about this mantra that we keep hearing from the West, that Ukraine must fight to the last man. You know, my God, how incredibly paternalistic. Who do these people think they are? That if when you look at the actual human collateral, you know, how much value does the West put on one Ukraine life? I would say nothing at all. It's almost as though their ideas and their human rights has completely been airbrushed out of the whole equation. Now, George talks about, you know, where this is all heading and why we have got this from the Western elites, this new rationale, this new, we keep hearing about the so-called reset button. You know, what is the reset button? I don't know what it is. You know what it is? You know, I don't think they know what it is, but I think what the Western elites have been doing for a very long time, certainly in my lifetime, is making this transition from being in power and governing and tackling problems head on to actually not dealing with problems at all, but simply making themselves look busy as if to give this idea that they're representing the interests of people who actually believe in, you know, the new world order based on free speech, on libertarian values, on human rights, etc. All that nonsense which we've been presented to for so long as being the the foundations of Western democracy, which in reality isn't really the true story. I think what's happening now, to explain what George touched on, is I think a certain sense of panic. Panic is setting in for the Western elites. They don't know where they're going. They're terrified of debate. Debate is like the AIDS of the new environment. You know, we don't want people actually talking. And this is why I'm horrified to get onto my laptop every morning and look at my Twitter timeline and discover more and more Western journalists being charged by their own judiciary systems. There's a particular lady in Germany now who's reported from Donbass. She has faced a legal case in her absence, and she's got this trial which is against her for just reporting the truth. And Western elites don't really like the truth as a commodity. They've controlled the so-called truth or the perceived truth for so long now. But I think a panic is setting in. And I think that panic is linked to the Ukraine. I think the panic is very much, you know, that they need to be more and more creative to support what I call the super elite. You know, we keep looking at the elites. We tend to think of the elites of people like Joe Biden or Boris Johnson or Emmanuel Macron, but they are really the puppets. They are really the sort of spokespersons of the real elite. The real elite is people who control equities in the stock markets, the banks, media, military industrial complex, and even Hollywood. This is the real elite. This is real powers that control people like Joe Biden. And we've been living under this pretense for so long that in the West, particularly in America, that, hey, it's okay. We have real democracy because if we don't like Joe Biden, we can vote him out. Well, vote him out and replace him with what? With whom? You know, another Muppet wearing a cheap suit representing those super elites. So I think, to answer the question and to go back to what George says, I think we're witnessing a state of panic from the super elites now. And Ukraine is part of that whole process of panic.
Yeah, but George, isn't Ukraine the deflection because of the panic that Martin has just talked about? I mean, problems are easily recognized, but when you live in their ideological bubble, they don't have any answers. They don't have any tools, okay? That's the problem they have. And the problem is they only talk to themselves. And what our problems are, they either don't recognize or could care less, because our concerns are not their concerns, and they are more importance because they have the power. George.
Yes, there's no question of that. And I mean, we can see this even in the coverage in the media of the downfall of Boris Johnson, in which the media obsess, you know, they devote hours and hours of coverage to all of the gossip and trivia of who said what and who knew what about what. And when, and none of it has any relevance. I mean, you just look at the actual numbers. Exactly, who cares about any of that? You know, with Britain facing 11% inflation, when people are unable to afford their gas and electricity bills, when you have essentially month after month of negative growth. I mean, the economy is stagnating. These are the issues that are roiling Britain, and it's going to get even worse as we head into the winter. And of course, the panic is also setting in, is that the rest of the world isn't buying what the West is selling. And whether it's India or China, they aren't interested in any of this liberal ideological claptrap that Blinken and Biden deliver for them, that there's some this great struggle going on in the world between democracy and authoritarianism. They have no idea what Blinken is talking about.
I have no idea what he's talking
about. Neither does Blinken.
So, the leaders of India and leaders of China, they pursue their national interests. You know, you could say they pursue their civilizational interests. And Russia does the same. They understand Russia's point of view. They understand what Russia is doing, but they have no understanding of what exactly the West is doing, what exactly the West is seeking to achieve in Ukraine. And in fact, when we ask that question, what exactly is the West seeking to achieve in Ukraine? It's impossible to answer. We're just going to go on, you know, whatever Zelensky wants, Zelensky will get. And we're just going to keep fighting. And we're going to try and hurt the Russians as much as possible. Well, with a view to what? I mean, where does this go, since you have no hope of winning and you have no hope of bringing the Russian economy to its knees? So the West is engaged in a war that that the rest of the world has no interest in and doesn't even understand what the West is doing.
You know, Martin, I'm glad that Boris Johnson was brought up because, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was head of the Conservative Party. But in the last waning days of this agony of his premiership, he was talking about toxic masculinity and at the Glasgow conference, he's talking about we need to be more feminine. I mean, I think voters didn't expect that from a conservative leader. Maybe I'm wrong. Go ahead.
No, because he was a bit odd in the respect that he came from that classic conservative background, that elitism of being an Eton. Not many people in Britain even know that Johnson isn't really even English. He's Russian, Greek, Turkish, and French all rolled into one. So he's an odd character, but he played up very much the left. And I think that's because, really, if you look at the winning blow of his last election, where he had almost a landslide, it was the huge contingent of old Labour voters that voted for him that crossed that line, you know, because they wanted to get Brexit done. The Tories won't have that the next time around, the next election. They won't have that ace to play. But the story about Johnson is really interesting if we're going to talk about elitism, because Johnson is a product of the whole elitism machine in the UK. And the reason why he had to be pulled out, the reason why there was this minor coup d'etat in England was because the Conservative Party realized that he wasn't playing by the rules of keeping this pretense going, that we have a fervent democracy in the UK and that we really believe in freedom of speech and human rights and all this. You know, he was going off the rails. He was going away from the plantation, off the plantation, as Americans say. And the panic of the Conservatives were, well, if you carry on doing that, it doesn't matter about all these scandals that you keep having, but if you carry on doing this, people will start to realize that actually this isn't a functioning democracy anymore. And that there is a facade here, you know, where the super elite in our country take the big decisions. And, you know, and I think a big part of, you know, George mentioned the unintended consequence of countries no longer buying our products, that probably wasn't factored in to taking on Russia in the UK. You know, the fact that you have this acceleration now of BRICS countries, you have this amalgamation of Russia, India, China together, all looking to see how can we build our own markets, you know, forget about the West, you know, let's look to the forward. That's really exciting. But I'm sure the super elite of these Western countries didn't factor that in. What they were thinking about, I think, were two fundamental things. First of all, how can we create a monumental distraction to all of our failed policies in the West? You know, create a war somewhere. That's a brilliant way of just herding all your journalists, you know, taking them away.
You said you have two points here. You said one, and we're going to go to a quick break. And after that quick break, we're going to get your number two. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. All right, Martin, I'm going to go back to you in Marrakesh here. You mentioned your first point. What is your second point? Go ahead.
The second point is the C word, corruption. And corruption always plays a big role when elites start to fail, when they start to lose their grip on the countries that they're controlling. You know, the super elites in Western Europe, I think, are starting to panic. And I think they are starting to worry that they will not be able to support themselves in the longer term. How do you ensure against that? You know, how do you back up how do you create a backup plan against that? You take $40 or $50 billion on the table and you push it across the table to your buddies in the industrial military complex. You say, there you go, guys, just take that. That should keep you going for a while now. And by the way, there's more to come. You know, so, you know, you have these huge rows between the European Union and America about illegal state aid. But when a war comes, all those state aid laws just go out of the window. You give as much money as you want to your own companies. So Raytheon, Lockheed Martin.
Even worse, give huge sums of money to one of the most corrupt countries in the world, which before February 24th of this year, it was well known Ukraine was a very corrupt place. I'm going to change gears a little bit, George. It's very interesting to me. We had a number of confabs. We had, you know, Brussels, you know, the EU is always in permanent a meeting. We had the G7, then we had NATO. But the most important meeting was the G20. Which the U.S. and its G7 allies basically disrupted and made it into a non-event. They obstructed it for reasons that you and Martin have already talked about here, is that they want the G7 element of the G20, if I can put it that way. They want to make sure their agenda is pursued. And everybody else saying, no, we're not on board. I mean, you don't want to solve the world's problems that you actually have created. Your sanctions, your secondary sanctions. We don't want to be part of that. We want to solve problems. We all know about growing food insecurity, sanctions and secondary sanctions. And again, obstruction, obstruction, obstruction. I would posit, George, the global South is no longer, number one, not interested in what the West has to say, but more importantly, it doesn't fear it anymore. Go ahead, George.
Yes, excellent point. And the solve problems aspect of it is very interesting because, as you say, the G7 crowd, they attended and they wanted to make it all about Russia and not to come up with any kinds of solutions, which is what the others said. Okay, well, let's, you know, here we all are. Let's see if we can discuss this and come up with a plan to resolve this problem. No, no, no. We just want to make these symbolic gestures, which is that I will not meet Sergei Lavrov. I will not shake his dirty hand. And I will not pose in a collective photograph afterwards. And I will not take part in any joint communique. So how does that, you know, solve the problem? How do we move forward from that? And that, I think, is really beginning to define the difference between the West and the rest of the world, because the rest of the world does think, okay, well, we've set up these organizations, and how do we try to resolve problems? And I think there really is something to that. I mean, you know, Lavrov emphasizes this all the time, which is when we set up these organizations, whether it's BRICS or the Shanghai Cooperation Organization or the CSTO, or the Eurasian Economic Area, we do it with a view to solving problems. We don't do it in order to direct it against someone else. Hey, great, now we're all together. You know, let's see how much we can hate the other. But as far as the West is concerned, it's always ideologically driven. They get together at the G7, they get together at NATO, at the EU, and all they do is, you know, they shake their fist at either Russia or China or anybody else who's not on board with the West's agenda. So, yeah, I mean, the West is more and more becoming a kind of an angry uncle that everybody's starting to just ignore. That, you know, what do they have to say to us?
I was thinking of a characterization, okay, angry uncle, but I think the West is the global Karen right now. It's like, oh, there they go again. They're going off the handle, you know. They're irrational, you know. Don't talk, never say calm down, because that makes them really more angry here. But it's very true. Martin, you know, I'm looking at, in the West, they don't give a whole lot of coverage to the G20 because they're, you know, they're not up in front and center. And in 2008, the G20, I would say, did play a positive role, at least getting a global consensus to deal with the economic crisis at the time. But that served the purposes of the West, and the economic crisis came out of the West, okay? And then, you know, when we have this situation meeting this year, the West doesn't want to participate in having global solutions. Okay, maybe you don't like what's going on in Ukraine, but I think everybody's concerned we don't want to have famine in Africa. I mean, I think, and that shows a lack of maturity coming from the West because it's ideologically possessed.
Yeah, it's ideologically possessed with its own narrative, which I think is fatally flawed. You know, they're obsessed with preserving their own agenda and their own identity, their own role. But it's interesting, the role of Africa could be critical in an end game in Ukraine, because what's going to happen in the next few weeks or couple of months is that some of these countries in Africa are going to really start suffering. And the first person they're going to turn to, the first institution they will turn to, is the European Union in Brussels, which has been banging on a drum for so long now about, you know, we can help you with trade and aid, but you've got to reform with human rights. There was a conference very recently in Brussels with all the heads of African states, and the message from the Africans were, we are sick and tired of the EU preaching to us about human rights. You know, we want much more from the European Union. But what's happening is that the old relationships between a lot of these African countries and their colonial masters is falling apart. Just recently, in the last few days, the French pulled out their last troops from Mali, which was an absolute catastrophe for Macron. You know, to fly the flag, the French flag in Mali, and to dish out the moral tutelage about human rights and fighting terrorism, when in reality, all of that was bullshit. Actually, the French were there protect big contracts for huge French multinationals and to protect French citizens who are working for them. The parenthesis to that was that the Malians were hoping that we could get some kind of deal with the French whereby they would protect us if we had some civil political uprising. Now, the old deal with colonial powers, well, the unwritten deal was, well, we'll help you with that, you know, for most of the 60s and 70s and 80s, but that's over now. You know, we can't do that anymore. Just as the Saudis and most of the GCC states discovered during the Arab Spring, when they looked at the Americans, when they started to get worried about political insurgency, you know, that's why these countries are looking more and more to Russia, because we've lost that moral tutelage, that moral high ground, you know, in the West. We don't have that influence anymore. So, you know, the role of Africans is going to be very interesting. If they decide they've had enough of this EU relationship and this nonsense, and they turn to their former colonial powers, Britain and France, and say, you need to help us out. We need hundreds of millions of dollars now in food aid. And people in Britain or France say, well, actually, that's quite difficult, because we've got people here that are actually starving. Our lines at food banks are getting longer and longer. Gasoline's getting out of control. In Britain, people are actually leaving their jobs because they can't afford to drive to work. That is how crazy it is. You know, there is going to be a tipping point at a certain point where the Europeans are going to say to the Africans, I'm sorry, we can't help. When that happens, everything changes. Because when that happens, where do the Africans turn? They turn to Russia.
That's such an interesting point, George. It was already mentioned earlier. I think Martin mentioned it earlier. Okay, the fall of Boris Johnson. Okay, in the British press, it was just kind of National Enquirer stuff. You know, who said what? Who was at that party? Why should any of us care about it? He's gone. Now Joe Biden is going to get a shellacking in November, and some, you know, there'll be a new Speaker of the House, and all of these things here. But George and Martin here, things are not going to change, okay? And this is what the panic that I think Martin quite aptly has mentioned here, because none of these people have any solutions to these problems. You know, you want to change people on a chessboard and things like that, but it's not fundamentally, because neoliberalism is the problem and this political class. So I think the panic is just going to continue and continue, because the status quo simply is not tenable.
Yes, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, you have one of the leading candidates to take over from Boris Johnson is Rishi Sunak, who's a billionaire, hedge fund manager, investment banker. Well, we know, you know, what his agenda is. And we've seen, in the United States, recently we had Mike Pompeo delivering an important address at the Hudson Institute, in which this as belligerent, if not more belligerent, than the Biden administration. If, you know, in fact, he's now envisaging war with Russia and China at the same time. And Pompeo, he's at the very least a candidate to be vice president, you know, whoever is the Republican nominee. So we don't have a system in which some new leader could emerge to say, hey, look, we're going completely wrong. I mean, look at Germany. Now, Olaf Scholz's Social Democrats are doing terribly. They're running a dismal third. But the people who's number one and number two, Christian Democrats and the Greens, they're more belligerent than Scholz is. I mean, their beef with Scholz is that he's not doing enough for Ukraine. And again, we have the case of the United States. It's quite possible that Donald Trump will return to power in 2025. But Trump will be in the same position as he was in 2017. I mean, if he really tries to affect some major change in U.S. foreign policy, the deep state or whatever you call it is going to come after him. I mean, you know, they've already got the plan in place as to what it will be. It'll be some variant of he's working for Putin. He's got a plan to destroy the West and whatever. But we can be sure that there's a plan already in place to destroy him even before he becomes president.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be the third impeachment trial. You know that.
Yes.
You know that. Okay.
Absolutely.
Martin, you brought up democracy here. What I find really quite pathetic is they like to mouth the word democracy, but they don't want any real democracy to be in play, because their priorities, the average citizen has no idea, as we point out on this program, have no idea why you say this is important for me, because it's not, okay? And they always confine, they limit the Overton window, as it were, about what you can actually talk about. Because if you're not talking about their priorities, then somehow, and we've gotten to this in 2022, you're unpatriotic, you're a toady of someone, you're misinformation.
Martin,
go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the whole point about debating is it's any kind of debate has been shut down. You get demonized, you get smeared, you even get sued or taken to courts if you even want to look at new ideas and ask, you know, what's the bigger picture here? It's worrying. I think it's really worrying that we've come to this stage. What worries me more is that some of these countries are going to implode politically. We don't have a third way yet. You know, so many people...
Martin, that's all the time we have here. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and Marrakesh. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.